Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We have some very unfortunate and sad breaking news. The Leafs just released a statement that Rodion Amarov has been diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So obviously, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, Amarov was the Leafs' first round pick in 2020. General manager Kyle Dubas just put out a statement today. He was playing in the KHL, suffered an injury to open the season, and over the course of his recovery, he developed symptoms that required additional testing. He's undergoing treatment in Germany, and he's out for the season, of course. The statement closes with, out of respect for Rodion and his family, the club will not have any further comment at this time. So sorry to kill the mood, but that came down literally right as we were coming back from break. So all the wishing a speedy recovery to Amarov and thoughts and energy with his family. Sorry to be a downer, guys.
No, it's the news. It's awful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You feel for the kid. And you hope that because he's young and because hopefully they caught it fast, that he'll end up being okay. So good luck to Rodion Amarov and everything that Blake just said. Tough pivot. Tough pivot, Blake. Let's bring in our next guest, Rick Tockett, former NHL head coach, current NHL on TNT analyst. Hey, Rick, good morning.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're doing okay, man. Thanks for jumping on. It's a pleasure. So we brought you on to talk about the Coyotes' sixth defenseman. This is Toronto. You knew this was coming, right? When you saw the request, you went, of course, let's do 20 minutes on this guy.
Yeah, Bush is, I've got a bunch of calls, actually. Bush is, he's a hell of a teammate. Like, that's the one thing that sticks out for me. He's an incredible person. Players love him. You know, he was a project when he came over from Russia, and he's really starting to get his game together. You know, I'd watched a little bit of the game. To be honest, I was flying into Atlanta, and I, you know, he had the little miscue here and there. The one thing with Bush, and I don't know, you guys will probably know, I don't know if he got a practice. He probably didn't get a practice, and I think.
No.
And not, you know, the Leaf fans are going to give him, like, what are you talking about, talking? But he didn't get practice in, and, you know, you got to give him some time here to get acclimated. But he can give them some good minutes as a right defenseman, especially in a playoff situation. If you need him to be, you know, in the corners and stuff, be a tough guy, he can really do that. He can squash the cycle. You know, the only advice I'd give is, like, you know, Toronto obviously some got great players, is you got to make a little quicker decisions with a puck. You know, get that puck up to the big boys. He likes to massage the puck every once in a while, and I think that's a little bit of KHL in them. You know, they like to, you know, hold on to the puck with bigger rinks. So if he could get that in his game, I think he'll be fine for the Leafs.
So one, I think that was great analysis. But two, the most important part of that for me is that Bush is the nickname, okay? Because I was wondering, like, where they actually settled, because everybody's doing the Russian bear, and everyone's all over the place. And Lyubushkin is a mouthful, and it's even more of a mouthful when it's pronounced correctly, which is Lyubushkin. So, like, I told Blake yesterday over chat that when you say his name Lyubushkin, it sounds like a character from, you know, like a Hobbit story, like, where it's like, oh, the elf Lyubushkin. Like, yeah, okay, it doesn't sound real. So having it be Bush is perfect. So thank you for that, Rick. Okay, so positives seem to be that he brings an element that the Maple Leafs don't have. I guess for you as a coach, how important is having that when you don't have a lot of it? Like, is there an added import that a guy like that ends up taking on when you don't have a lot of physicality on your blue line or on your team in general? Or do you worry that a guy ends up trying to overcompensate a little bit because he feels like he needs to do even more in that role?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to – I think he's going to know his role. I mean, there's going to be some – listen, look, the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to make the playoffs. It's just a matter of who they play. Obviously, you know, right now it looks like Tampa. You're looking for matchups, right? You're looking for – you know, if he's, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he'll go against Pat, you know, the third line, Pat Maroon and Corey Perry, those guys in the corner, and he can handle himself. You know, those are the matchups you want in the playoffs. That's what, you know, Sheldon Keefe will be looking for, and he can do the job in that situation. Obviously, you know, there's certain matchups you don't want him out there as much. I'm not saying he can't do the job. So that's what I look at. He's a guy that he can fill a role, especially in those matchup issues in the playoffs, because he can muck and grind. I mean, you know the playoffs, that's what it's all about. You know, obviously the refs put the whistle away a little bit more, so there's going to be a little bit more fighting aloud in the corners and blocking shots and boxing out. I mean, boxing out to be is big in the playoffs, so that's something he can do. And if you know, and Deitch knows, I know very well, he's done a great job with Leafs defensemen. If he gets them to move the puck a little quicker, it's going to be an added bonus.
How much of adjustment is it from coming from Arizona, which is obviously having a bit of a tough season, to say it nicely, to come over to the Leafs, play in a different division, as somebody that was playing around 18 minutes per game on like a top pairing, and then you step into a new system. Do you see him being someone that can fit into a second pairing here on the Leafs? Is there some time about just like having to play for a better team that makes some difference in your confidence level at least? And where do you see him maybe when he evens out over the next couple weeks?
Yeah, great question, because, you know, we all go through it when people get traded. You're in a different role. You know, obviously, you know, he plays a ton in Arizona. You know, they're just trying to create stuff there. Obviously, they're not going to win a lot of games, so he's getting that 18, 19 minutes, even if he's having a tough night. You know, you go to a situation where you go to a team that's what they got, like 40, 30 points more than Arizona. You got some like incredible players, star players, and there's, you know, the pressure cooker of, hey, this team's, you know, there's a lot of pressure on it, but this team has a chance to go far. So Bush has to fill that role, and he's done it before. You know, when we were half decent a couple of years when I was coaching, you know, Bush would get his, you know, 13, 14, 15 minutes, and he would supply that for you. So going to have to change his game a little bit, not play as much, because obviously Toronto's got better players. But he can grow in that role. I mean, you know, that doesn't mean he can't try to grab more minutes by playing better. So, you know, I wish I could talk to Bush, because it's going to be a lot of fun to play in Toronto with the pressure, you know, a little bit different than no pressure in Arizona, other than the fact that you're just trying to, you know, become an established NHL player. You're not really going to win. I think it's a little adjustment, because you're going to obviously a team that's a lot better, and you're going to have to fit a different role than you did in Arizona.
This hadn't dawned on me until talking to you right now, but there is some kind of an irony in Arizona being the least covered team in hockey, and yet some of the biggest names in hockey coverage right now are you know, Wayne Gretzky, Paul Bissonnette, all with ties to that organization. Like, they're, you know, we can actually call people to give thoughts on the Arizona Coyotes. It's a very strange thing. Like, the biggest, but then also, I can't tell you one, like, how many beat writers does Arizona have? Like, is there one person that regularly covers the team? Like, is there, like, I have no clue. We're talking to Rick Tockett.
It's not much.
Yeah.
It's not much.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, Keith Kachuk gave me crap the other day. He goes, like, I think this is our fourth coverage of Arizona this year on TNT, which I'm not sure why, you know, the schedule makers. But, you know, we haven't done Calgary once, and they're probably the best team in the league right now. And, you know, and his son, well, how come you can't get my son on? So we were laughing.
Yeah. Yeah, he wants the coverage south of the border. Absolutely. Of course he does. That's a Team USA staple. So I guess this is my last one on Leo Bushkin, which is how do you think that he's going to be playing with a guy like Rasmus Sandin, who's a younger, developing defenseman, where if he doesn't perform very well, the market is probably going to be a little difficult with him, because that's someone that fans are going to be protectionist with, right? That's a young guy who moves the puck up, who's being asked to take on a pretty big role, and right away Sheldon Keefe puts him with him, which kind of indicates that he will be playing probably closer to 18 minutes a night. He seems to be a good guy. Michael Bunting ended up coming in and saying that, like, he had the same words as you did in terms of the kind of guy he is in the room. But, yeah, the curiosity point of, hey, going from a market where there isn't a ton of market pressure to a place like this, how do you think he's going to adjust by just playing with a younger player who's still developing and handling that added pressure, knowing that that younger player is kind of like a darling of the market?
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, like, the players will know, like, and Austin Matthews actually scaling this summer, and, you know, he knows him a little bit too. Like, players on your team root for you. Even, like, when you're having a tough night or if fans are on you, you know, your teammates can bail you out. So I understand what you're saying. He's going the younger kid. You know, Bush is, he's not a savvy veteran, but he's been in the league, you know, 3-4 years now. He's been put in different roles. And, you know, there's a way of Bush, the way he can communicate and the way he talks to young kids, he's infectious. So I think that will help. I just hope Bush gets off to a good start. I really do, especially in that market, because if he's got some confidence and he knows that you know he's got people behind him, he can really play well for your team and do the things that Toronto needs. You know, the shot blockers, a guy that will run some play. He'll run somebody. He doesn't care if it's Steve Stamkos or Kucherov. He'll hit those guys hard, and that's something, you know, the Leafs probably need back there. You know, somebody who can change the game by physicality. So, you know, hopefully the confidence, you can give confidence to the young guy. They could be a pair that, you know, you're not scared to put out there against anybody. But he's a great teammate, and that's infectious. And guys will want to root for a guy, and guys will want to help him out, especially when, you're that good of a teammate.
So the Leafs are getting a little bit of maybe added excitement with a new player and approaching the trade deadline, but they've been in a little bit of a slump. As we say in Toronto media, whoa, big slump, three games, but it definitely has been a bit of a different Maple Leafs over the last couple games. What do you do or who do you look for in this situation? Is it on the leadership to, you know, let's right this ship here, let's pick this up? Is it the coaching decisions? Are you looking for line shuffling? What would you say is the most important thing where the Leafs look back over the next three games and how to reevaluate what to do moving forward?
Yeah, I really like what Sheldon Keith said. You know, it's a little bit of a wake-up call. It's a good time of the year. You know, it's not in April. It's a little bit before, obviously. You still got the month of March. To me, I don't know if you can really lean on a coach too much. I think this is a leadership thing. I think the guys, Tavares, Matthews, you know, Marn, those type of guys will, you know, you got to get guys together and say, we got to just tighten up a little bit. Sometimes it's okay to just play. You know, when you got a little bit of a slump going, you know, seems like any breakdown in your net, just tighten it up. Let's see if we just tighten it, you know, because, you know, obviously the Leafs are going to be judged on in the playoffs and how well they played defensively, right? As if they can, you know, they can score enough goals, but in pressure situations, can they lock it down? That's what I would concentrate if I was in that leadership group. Yeah, let's make sure that we play a more calculated game. You know, we're going to get our goals until we right the ship. You know, I don't see this being a, you know, I could see them win their next game. You know, they bounce back so well this year. Very rarely that you see them lose 2-3 in a row. So I don't think it's much of a problem. I mean, you know, I know it's Leaf Nation gets a little, you know, uneasy if you lose a couple of games, but that's a good thing in the sense that you know that your team can bounce back like that, and obviously the leadership group has to be a big part of it. So I don't think this is on Sheldon Keith, this one. I think this is a leadership group that can figure their way out here this week. I think sometimes the coach has to kind of step back and let them take over the room sometimes, because it's going to happen later in the season, and it can't always be the coach going in there and trying to right the ship, even though he's part of it and I think he's done a great job this year.
Yeah, I think he's done a great job too, and I'm always fascinated by him because he's a huge attention to detail guy, and I know that that's a lot of coaches, but he seems to be someone who has had to learn or is still learning about using his bullets, whether it's coaching through the media or expressing his frustrations or giving a quote that we all sort of nitpick in this market. But yeah, he's been dealt some good cards with like a deep and talented forward group, but it's also been difficult, right? Because he's had those like injuries that Ehlers mentioned on the blue line. Like now he loses Jake Muzzin as he's trying to get something. He hasn't had a consistent play from a couple of his veterans and Justin Hall and Travis Dermott this year that they were kind of relying upon for depth. They've had to go to really young and experienced players, and now to a guy that didn't even get a practice with the team playing 15 minutes in his debut night. How difficult do you think it is for these guys, these defensemen, when you have a situation where your coach is kind of moving the pairings around night in, night out? Like, does that create an added challenge? Is that something that we overestimate, or is that something that we overlook?
Yeah, and you're right about the bullets. As a coach, you choose your bullets, and you got to pick and choose, you know, when you come after the team or your message. Sometimes to back off, and like I said before, this is the time for me to back off. You know, this is actually a good exercise for the Leafs to go through this. And like you just said, okay, we're going to mismatch the defense. We got a new guy coming in here. A couple of guys have not played well. We're trying to, you know, your best physical defenseman, and maybe, you know, 1A, 1B is out. Muzzin's been out for a long time. These are good problems in the sense of this is where your depth's being challenged, right? So because it's going to happen. If you're going to go far in a Stanley Cup, this is going to happen. I remember when we went back-to-back in Pittsburgh. We had injuries all the time to win those, you know, to win all those games in the playoffs. And we've had, you know, we had guys that Chad Rietel, he had to come in and play well. I mean, he was on, you know, didn't dress for 2 months, so, and he played well for us. So you have to have those type of players play well for you, so you might as well test them in now. As for, yeah, and listen, when you're not playing well and you're having a tough year, obviously the coach staff doesn't put you out there as much, you lose confidence. You know, these are the times when you're getting the opportunity. You got to find it deep down if you want to be an NHL player, and you know you're going to, you know, you're going against this team that this is your, I hate to say it sometimes, like, hey, this is my Stanley Cup playoff game. I got to play well today to show these guys that, hey, you're going to count on me and I want to be in the lineup. And that, like I said, playing simple for those guys to me is just move. As soon as you get the puck, like, I know, and I was that type of player too. If you're struggling, you know, just play the simple game. I know it's a most, you know, overused coaching word, play simple. You know, what do you tell a player? Play simple. It is true. You know, move the puck quick, play a little physical in front of your net, and try not to be noticed that way while you're overhandling the puck. I think if they can, a couple of those guys do that, and when all the reinforcements get back nice and healthy, I think it's a good thing.
Before we let you go, we got to ask about the breakthrough star, the hometown hero, Michael Bunting, who has just won the hearts of all of Toronto here with his play this season. I want to know, you know, is this a surprise to you? Why is he fitting so well with this top line? And what is it about his play that is just so perfect for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I coached her 4 years. You know, he came into camp, and I always kind of liked Bunts. You know, we called him up one time. He went into Boston, scored a goal. He's a scrappy guy. But, you know, he wasn't a pro down the minors, what I was told. I didn't know much about him, but he worked his way, and he started to get himself in shape. He dedicated himself. All of a sudden, he finally called him up. I remember talking to Bill Armstrong. He said, why don't we give Bunts a try? So Bunts comes up. And he scores, I don't know, 10, 12 goals for me in like 20 games. I mean, he's like one of our top goal scorers in a month. He's an infectious guy. I mean, he's in great shape. He loves the game. So I'll tell you guys, I was surprised. I talked to a couple NHL teams. They asked me about him. And I'm shocked that Arizona didn't re-sign him. And when the Leafs grabbed him, I said, what a signing by Kyle. That was a great move by the Leafs. And what's he got, 17, 18 goals? I mean, I don't know what they're paying him, less than $1 million. I don't know what they're paying him. So what a great signing. I'm surprised a couple of teams didn't jump in on the signing, because he's definitely been a great add. And he's perfect spot for Marner and Matthews, especially with the playoff, for that scrappy guy that goes inside and he's going to be taking cross checks in front to score goals. That's exactly what that top line needs.
Yeah. His agent... I don't know how good he feels knowing, like, this guy probably left some money on the table. It feels like such a generous contract, especially since, yeah, it's less than $1 million for another year. I have a theory, too. It's working even better considering he's such a ratty player that if you're getting dominated by Matthews and Marner and all of a sudden there's this guy who's just relentless and in your face and a little undersized who is behaving the way that he behaves or plays the way that he plays, that it just sends you into another level of frustration as a player and you lose your mind. And that's part of the reason why he's drawing so many penalties.
100%. And just figuring a game seven, and Bunce said, you know, he's never played an NHL playoff game, so this is going to be important for him, but he's got to be relentless. He's got to just, from game one to game seven, do the same thing every game. I'm going to go in front of the net. I'm going to be in, you know, if they play Tampa, you know, if I'm out there with Hedman, I'm going to go in front of the net. I'm going to be wrestling with this guy in the corners. I'm going to hit him. He's got to consistently do that for seven games. If he can do that, that'll be a huge add for the Leafs, because that's how you win playoff games. Somebody's willing to do the same thing for seven games. I know it's hard. It's tough. It's going to hurt. But if you're willing to do that, especially against the other team's best players, that's a huge win for the Leafs.
Rick Tocchet, this was a real pleasure. Thanks so much for making time for us today. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks. Great questions. I'll talk to you guys later. Thank you.
Take care, man. Rick Tocchet, former NHL head coach, current NHL on TNT analyst. We got to go pretty quick here, but I thought that was really, really insightful on Lyubushkin. That's a guy who's coached him. And I know that hockey is a fraternity where people don't normally say, oh, this guy's a bad guy or something like that. But it is interesting to me that he and Bunting both came out with that right away. I didn't know that he had already skated with Matthews during the summer, so maybe he does feel like he gets a little bit more acclimated by being around some guys he already knows. And if he is a confidence player, that's pretty good considering this team. I think that him bringing that element that they don't really have, is going to be very, very good for the team. So, yeah, I think this signing or this trade is going to end up being a good one for the Leafs. It's just, it seems like a lot of people, though, keep saying the same thing, where it's once he tries to do a little bit too much, you get into trouble. And I wonder how that's going to be weighed with him having to play more minutes.
I also wonder if that's also because he played in Arizona, where like you're getting swarmed by other teams, and maybe you're trying to do too much because you're a top line pair, and you're like, hey, you know, we got to generate something. And maybe he'll have more of like a calmer presence when he's playing with better players on the Maple Leafs. I think that there's something that could be improved. You know, that's why I asked Rick about the difference between playing for a team that's stellar and a team that isn't, because maybe you can change your style a little bit. But I think I'm all on the boost train as well.
Yeah. Let's take a break and let's talk to Ernie Johnson. Very, very excited. The NBA just had its 75th anniversary team. I'm still upset that, you know, Russell Westbrook was on it over guys like Pau Gasol, but whatever. It's fine. I'll get over it. Let's talk to Ernie Johnson about NBA All-Star Weekend, LeBron, and that incredible class of players that showed up. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD, Blake, and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. JD Bunkus. Ailish Forfar. And Blake Murphy is back today. How'd you feel, Blake?
Being back?
Yes. How are you feeling at the end of the show? You paced yourself?
Did you
well?
Miss us?
You your fire alarm?
Yeah, of course
yeah,
I missed you guys.
Oh, good. Comes full circle. Yeah.
The fire alarm.
Oh, you. Where's our enthusiasm?
I managed to mute during the fire alarm, so that's good. I didn't blast in anyone's ears. Yes, I missed you guys. I listened to the Wake and Rake segments and the Anne Renee interview. I didn't listen to the whole 8 hours of the show, mostly because I was worried about hearing all the awful things you guys probably said about me. So, but yeah, I don't know. It was just, it felt like a good window to get a little breather because no Raptors until Friday, which by the way, I'm glad all those players are getting a break, but please never give me 8 days without the Raptors again.
So we had Blake Bingo today. His fire alarm went off. His cat moved the webcam. He made excuses on the Wake and Rake. It was amazing.
Those were really preemptive excuses. That's a different box on the bingo chart. It's one thing is to make excuses for losses. The other is to like set up the bet with excuses. There's two different ways.
Ernie Johnson, host of Inside the NBA on TNT, seven-time Sports Emmy Award winner, joins us now. Ernie, good morning.
Good morning, y'all. How we doing?
We are doing very, very, very well. I know that you spend your time around NBA legends.
Why the delay in answering that question, by the way? Or is that just something technically going on here? Because I said, hey, I'm doing great. And then there was like a 24-minute pause. And you said, oh, good. So what's up here?
I don't know, Ernie. We're going to let JD figure that out. You and I will just chop it up here. I got to say, too, the way JD introduced you was great. The seven-time Sports Emmy Award winner, it hits a lot better for you than like when we were doing the whole seven-time All-Star Joe Johnson thing the other year. A lot more impressive for a seven-time Sports Emmy Award winner. Man, how was the weekend for you? That
actually
seemed like a blast.
I think it's six.
Six?
It was great. Yeah, it's six, not seven. I don't know where that seven comes from, but it is six. So anyway, the weekend was fun. It was pretty nippy up there. You know, I looked out one day, it was like 12 degrees in the middle of the afternoon, and so that was a little harsh, but as far as the NBA and the 75 years and everything else, it was great. I mean, I enjoyed every step of the journey on that thing. You know, we broadcast from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the first night, and then we had the Friday Saturday stuff, and then the game was great. I thought the game, correct me if I'm wrong here, I thought the game was better than the slam dunk contest. I thought it may be just me, but that's just what I think.
It was not you at all, Ernie. I agree completely. Now, you said you broadcast from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I guess the biggest question for me coming out of the weekend is, are you being inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame after you laid down that rap about the top 75 NBA players of all time?
You know what? That was I do a poem every year for that event, and it just seemed like I would. And I was trying to think of what direction I would go in, because normally I have a list of maybe 8 to 10 people who we know are going to be there at the brunch for sure. And then I usually tailor that so that I can salute 4 or 5 of those guys and have them stand up. But because of the uncertainty with COVID and everything, and who was going to be able to travel and that kind of thing, I said, I'm just going to do something that's 75 related. And, yeah, so I was able to come up with something that rhymed all those guys together. And so, no, there has not been a call from the Rock Hall. But I'll tell you this, it was so much fun to do that. And again, that event, that Legends event every year, is the highlight of the weekend for me, because it's just like opening up a box of basketball cards, and there they all are. You know, you're 10 feet away looking at Oscar Robertson, and there's Bill Russell. He wasn't there this year, but then Bill Walton is right there. Ray Allen's right down there. I mean, it's such a cool morning.
It sounds great. And you said you didn't get the invite, but I just want to say you haven't got the invite from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame yet. That's an important qualifier there. These things take time. So this is obviously the league's diamond anniversary. The NBA 75 is a huge thing that they've put a lot of time into, and it was kind of, you know, the highlight of the weekend from everyone I talked to who was there was this celebration of 75 years of the NBA. Yeah. How meaningful is it for you to be a part of that? Not only doing the poem at the Legends event, but also like two of your Inside the NBA co-hosts are on that list. And you were a huge part of this weekend's festivities and obviously a huge part of the NBA in general. Like, this has to mean a lot to you as well, even though you're not one of the 75 players. Because it's a celebration of the whole league, and you're so kind of embedded in the fabric of it.
No, and, you know, I've been covering the league for a long time. But, this is all about those – it's all about those 75. And it's – what's cool is to just think back, you know, when I was watching – and it was a pretty poignant moment, I think, when these guys were being introduced and they were walking out. And because it spans so many eras of the game, and so it's great to see Charles out there, and then Billy Cunningham, his old Philadelphia coach, comes out. I mean, I just I think back when I'm doing that, I said, shoot, I've been in this chair for 32 years, you know, watching these guys. I've seen some of these careers start and end, and so that's kind of like the thing that's kind of staggering to me, is like, man, this is, you know, I remember when this guy was drafted, and now here he is. I mean, I remember talking to Kevin Garnett as a teenager on the eve of the draft, you know, and now I'm seeing him walking in with his blazer, and it was that part of it was very cool. And then to hear Chuck and Shaq really in a very impassioned way talk about what it meant to them to be there, and you know, for one of those rare moments on our show where people aren't clowning on each other, it was like, sincerely, this is how much it means to me. I thought that part of it was really great.
So was there one player that you saw there that you reflected on and it really stuck out to you, like a certain player that showed up and you went, wow, he's here and I hadn't thought about him in a while and now I am?
I don't know. I mean, I think that happens with a lot of those guys, but you know, you see the, because you haven't seen him, but like the Chief, you know, and it was great to see, you know, I can't even begin to go down the list of guys. It was great to see these guys. It was just, in its entirety, it was just one of those really feel-good moments. So I'm not going to try to single anybody out. When I saw Michael go up, that was a bit of a surprise, because I know Michael had been down at Daytona. He's, you know, a NASCAR owner down there, so he had been at the race. I don't know if, and I talked to Chuck, and I said, so was Michael in the room when you guys were getting the picture taken? He said, no, I didn't see him in there. And so he must have done something, pretty quick to get from Daytona to Cleveland in time for that halftime walk-off.
We also got the little clip of Michael and Magic backstage at that event, and there's a little bit of trash talk about the one-on-one and stuff like that. How much of the competitive spirit still burns between these guys? Like, obviously, you become a part of this elite basketball fraternity, and I'm sure everyone's friendly and there's good times, but there's also, it seems like, at least maybe this is just Michael, because, you know, from everything we know about him in The Last Dance, that he just never lets this stuff go. But is there still like a bit of a competitive spirit between guys? Like, obviously Shaq and Charles have the jokey version of that, but is there still some, hey, remember when I beat you, remember when I did this, or I'd still beat you, that kind of thing going on when these guys are having discussions that we're not privy to?
Well, I'm sure some of this stems too. I mean, you're not just talking about guys who competed against each other, but guys who were teammates on the Dream Team and have, mm-hmm. you know, they have a lot of shared history. And so when you don't know exactly what the conversation is centering on, yeah, you can assume it's this or it's this. But look, once a competitor, always a competitor. I don't think that just because you take the shorts off that suddenly you're not a competitor. And I think when you're back around these guys, you know, you talk about bragging rights and that kind of thing. You know, when guys win titles or when guys win championships or you're the leading scorer or whatever, and you have these bragging rights, it's not like those have to be cashed in the first 2 years from when they're accomplished. I think those are things, when you talk about bragging rights, that years later, when we're gathered and being honored as the 75 best players of all time in the league, I'm still going to be able to tell you, hey, remember that year we beat y'all? And so I think that those competitive juices never stop flowing. They may not be as apparent as they used to be, but it's still in there. So that's part of the greatness of that weekend, was just spanning the eras of this game and seeing those greats. You know, seeing Bob Pettit walk up, you know, and then it was just wonderful. It was just awesome.
You mentioned spanning eras, and obviously that includes some modern players, some of those guys that they're in their warm-ups and they got to throw a blazer over top of the warm-up to come out. I thought it would have been a funny bit if for the third quarter, like, those guys kept their blazers on while they were on the court. But we do see, you know, we get to do a little bit of the kind of celebration of active players we maybe don't get to do very often, where it's like, hey, this guy is not only an all-star right now, but he's a part of basketball history already. And you do that with guys like Giannis and Steph. And especially this weekend, I think, because the all-star game was back in Cleveland, LeBron James. And I know Steph took the MVP and he kind of took over with the 16 threes and everything. It did feel a little bit like LeBron wanted that game and he wanted that MVP and he wanted the little celebration in Cleveland. Did you get the sense being there that this weekend was at least a little bit about LeBron? I know there's everyone wants to kind of fantasy book him going back to Cleveland at some point, but it did seem at least a little bit of celebration of LeBron.
Well, that was certainly part of the narrative, and the city embraces him, and it would have been, you know, it would have set up if he had, you know, if Steph hadn't just been ridiculous. You know, if you hit the game winner and have a big night and your team, you know, and your team wins and you're back in Cleveland, yeah, I mean, it would have been a nice story, and it would have been his fourth All-Star Game MVP, which would have tied him for the most all-time with Pettit and Kobe. So there were a lot of things at work there, but you just can't you can't overlook the night that Steph had. But, I mean, that shooting display in the third quarter was just ridiculous. And so, that was part of the narrative. It was nice to see, and I think, you know, he answered a lot of questions about that. And then, you know, when you leave the door open to say, well, you never know, and then people are going to, you know, start chirping a lot. But, there were some good storylines for the weekend, but certainly, you know, Steph's performance, you know, he's too shy of, you know, tying Anthony Davis for the most ever in an All-Star game, but the 16-3 set a record. Yeah, I mean, look, you reflect on that weekend. It was just it was well done, man. It was that'll go in the memory books.
So with the LeBron factor, obviously a lot of attention on him that weekend, and there's been a lot of attention on the Lakers of late. Things are not going as well as they hoped. There's obviously the awkwardness of some of the reporting around their approach to the deadline, LeBron with just a year and a half left on his contract there. Is there a team in the Western Conference you're more fascinated or interested by in the second half than how the Lakers try to steer out of this and try to, I mean, not only avoid the play-in, but they're only a couple games up on a playoff spot altogether?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really hard without Anthony Davis for them to make any kind of a substantial move, in my opinion, guys. I mean, you've got to be, if you're going to make a run here in the last 25 games of the season or so, you know, you need everybody clicking. You need your guys. And I think we've already seen that when you're missing one of those pieces like an Anthony Davis, you're not whole. And it's really tough for you to make that kind of a run. They haven't put any kind of a winning streak together of any significance this year. And you're sitting at 27 and 31. They're just going to have to try to, you know, if you can maybe move up a spot or two, maybe, but you're going to have to catch some fire that we haven't seen. And so, no, this is not a sure thing by any means, although, you know, Portland's three games behind them, and then you got, you know, it's been a tough year for San Antonio and New Orleans and that bunch. So they're probably going to make the play-in, but if you have any thoughts of trying to get into that top six and avoid that, man, you're going to need your pieces, and they don't have them right now.
Yeah, I think their only hope this year is they end up getting AD healthy at the right time and that LeBron can still hit that switch at the right moment, and knowing that the West doesn't really have an overly dominant team unless maybe the Warriors can get healthy and right at the right time as well. And that, I think that extends to as well as the Suns have played. But
really, Phoenix is a good team, man.
They're good, but do you think they're
not
dominant?
Not just the record, 48-10. Well, you know what? They play both ends of the floor, and mm-hmm. and they have they may not have the I don't know, but look, maybe they do. Devin Booker can give you 30 on any night, and Chris Paul doing his thing. But see, that's the question right now. I mean, what's Chris Paul going to look like when he comes back? Will Phoenix still have the lead at that point? Certainly they're not as dominant. To your point, I agree. I mean, if you don't have Chris Paul, then Phoenix is not Phoenix. But this is going to be an interesting stretch for them. And let's see what happens if Golden State gets Wiseman back. Let's see if Draymond Green comes back. Let's see. You know, we haven't seen Golden State at full strength. So there's a lot of stuff going on in these last 25. But I mean, if everybody had their pieces, then there's no way. Phoenix, Golden State are a notch above everybody else out there, no question, when they're all healthy.
Yeah, I think so too. I just think that the Lakers case, if they can get in and healthy, is going to be the same Lakers case that it was at the beginning of the year. And maybe it's because we watched the Raptors up here and we watched, you know, that season, I believe it was 2016, 2017, no, maybe even later, where everyone wrote off the Cavs because they were the worst defensive team that was with LeBron in his entire history. And we went, oh, you know what, this team, this isn't your usual Cavs team. And then Toronto got absolutely bodied by them because LeBron went LeBron and he's hitting, you know, walk-off shots with one hand going coast to coast. And I would think that if they end up in a series against Phoenix, I would say the difference between them and Golden State is I would go, well, maybe LA ends up having the best two players in the series. Like, that's not outside the realm of possibility. And that would still scare me about the Lakers getting in. But to your point, I don't know if we've seen enough from the Lakers this year, and I think that their team as a collective is kind of proving time and time again that even if LeBron is playing this way or they get a good AD, they just don't even have that third guy, that third banana to kind of help supplement it.
Yeah, no, it's been a confounding situation to watch out there for all the expectations going in with AD and Westbrook and LeBron. But, I just don't know what the problem has been. And I think a lot of people are quick to point fingers and say, oh, no, it's Westbrook. No, it's Frank Vogel. No, it's whoever put the team together. It's Rob Pelinka. You win as a team and you lose as a team. You know, there's enough blame to go around on certain nights that you can look at anybody on that team and say, look, they just have not gotten this thing together. So instead of assigning blame to somebody, I think it's time, you look in the mirror and say, how am I going to make this team better? What am I going to do that's going to make us win games and go on a little run and get out of this position we're in right now? Look, you don't want to be in that play-in. You don't. Lakers were in it last year, were able to win their first game and then breathe easy. But, man, if you're, right now it's, Portland going to L.A. to take on the Lakers, and then the Lakers taking on the loser of the Timberwolves and Clippers. Clippers have been really tough on the Lakers, if that's the way it turns out. So who knows? Who's going to be healthy? Who's going to be in the best shape to make a run come April, and let's see. That's what makes it fun, man. But the whole injury thing really muddies the waters with Paul, with AD, that kind of thing, and if Golden State gets healthy again. So anyway, that's a very, very long answer, pretty convoluted. I'm very good at that, and back to you.
You're very good at everything, though, Ernie, is the thing. And look, the answer is deep like that and kind of has to touch on a number of things, because this is the second half of the season that we're headed for. There are six teams at the Eastern Conference that think they can get out of the Eastern Conference. There are seven teams, maybe more, in the Western Conference that have eyes on that as well. So when you lay out all these things, it's going to be matchups and health and who gets hot at the right time. It's going to be a tremendous second half of the season and playoffs, I think. So really looking forward to it. Really looking forward to checking you guys out on Inside the NBA all the way through. Ernie Johnson, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man. And if you don't actually have that seventh Sports Emmy yet, I'm sure it's on the way. Sixth time Emmy Award winner. Thanks, Ernie.
I appreciate it, y'all. Have a great day.
See you, Ernie. Know what? Talking to him, a couple things. One, though, is usually one of my biggest points of frustration with the Stanley Cup playoffs, it's why I love it, but also what sucks, is that it's such a war of attrition that by the time you get to the end sometimes, one of the teams is so incredibly beat up that you don't end up with the best finals. You end up with a conference finals where someone's beat up and they lose to an inferior team, or you end up with a finals where a group doesn't have their legs or they're missing and you end up getting revealed that multiple players were hurt, right? Because it's so hard. This year in the NBA feels very Stanley Cup playoff-ish, where there are a bunch of teams that could win. There are a few teams that we all agree are at the top, but there isn't such a wide gap between the teams at the top and the teams in the middle that you couldn't see an upset in a lot of these cases. But also, it really does feel like it's going to come down to health. Can you get a healthy Anthony Davis, and will LeBron be at his best come season's end? Because if you do get those guys, then it's going to be hard to find a team in the Western Conference that have a better duo when they're at their best and healthy. Can you get Chris Paul healthy? Can he stay healthy long enough for the Suns to make a deep run? Can the Warriors stay healthy? Is Draymond's injury something that we should probably flag as a bit more concerning at this point of the season? Is Klay going to round into form? What's going to happen with Kevin Durant? Will James Harden get into shape? Can Joel Embiid maintain this level of health? Drew Holiday for the Milwaukee Bucks is a notorious Band-Aid. He's out there waiting to get hurt. Like, I can go down the line and pick every single team that is in the contender tier and say, yeah, but, when it comes to someone who could get injured for them. And I'm talking about, like, like likely injury, not freak stuff like, oh, Giannis, who never gets hurt, who actually did get hurt and turned his ankle over to the point where I thought he was done for his career and then just went on and had a one of the most dominant finals appearances ever. He's in that LeBron in his prime mode where he just can't be hurt. He's such a freak.
Easy 50 on one knee.
Right, sure. Yeah, no problem, whatever. I'll just tear everything. I
just
don't care.
This is the thing, like, I was talking to a 76ers fan friend of mine, and there was so much of this excitement coming out of that trade for them, and just, like, closing the book on the Simmons chapter, whether you like the value or not.
Yeah.
And this friend joked, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm entirely ready for Joel Embiid to get hurt in the All-Star game now. And that's a little bit of 76ers fan angst from the last few years, but it's also, I think, an implicit, like, hey, every one of these teams, like, this has to be the most wide open the NBA season has felt in forever. And, like, yeah, the pandemic years affected that a little bit, and we had some unlikely conference finals runs and stuff like that. But, again, six teams in the East probably think they can make the NBA finals, and I would say there are probably seven or eight in the West that think they could do it if things break right. And that's where every little thing is, and this is why I'm excited for the second half of the season, is, A, these games are going to matter, right? Like there are a lot of teams where seeding matters, home court matters. Home court also matters because most of these teams have had depressed revenues the last couple of years because of the pandemic. And yeah, you're not going to have front offices being like, oh, well, we're cool with being on the road, whatever, we'll win it. No, you want it all that gate. And then the introduction of the play-in game has made it so there are fewer bottom feeders for these top teams to just pick on, where if you're playing OKC or Houston or Detroit or Orlando, it's a not a great game, it's a layup game, it's a circle win on the calendar. But for the most part, there are 20 teams, 22 teams maybe, that are going to be trying to beat you, that are going to be fighting for position. I think this is going to be one of the better second halves of the NBA season, and there will be some load management and rest, because again, you get a guy injured, that's a bigger swing than falling a spot in the standings. It's going to be a fun second half. That gets back in action tomorrow night with seven NBA games. Raptors back in action on Friday. No Leafs or Raptors tonight. You got a couple NHL games. You got your wake and rake picks in college basketball. We'll be back tomorrow. Oh, also, we're going to do a little mailbag stuff on the Raptors tomorrow. So keep an eye out. I'll put a tweet out asking for questions, and then we'll put a text line out tomorrow as well if you have Raptors questions to tee up the second half. All that's tomorrow. Follow at JD Bunkus, follow at Ailish Forfar, subscribe to the podcast, 5 stars, rate, review, all that good stuff. The Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.